I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards?
Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Reaction Podcast for Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm your host, William Liu, and it feels really good to be back. Welcome back to the podcast. Yeah, the Raptors are back in action. And look, I know it's just preseason. I get it. Like, you know, nobody cares about a preseason game in Japan unless you're Mike D'Antoni calling for VAR in the middle of the third quarter on a random foul call. Good for you. Make sure you get that complaining to the referee in early. But it's just good to see the Raptors play basketball. And it's great to see the Raptors win a basketball game, most importantly. Of course, the reigning champions. You know, very different this season. No Kawhi, no Danny Green. And honestly, in this game, there wasn't even Kyle Lowry, who is apparently still needs clearance on his thumb, even though he said he doesn't need clearance on his thumb and he was playing football at practice. All right, cool. And Marc Gasol, who obviously had a very arduous and long summer playing for the Spanish national team and winning for the Spanish national team at the FIBA World Cup. So it was a very different Raptors team, but the Raptors, you know, still won, being the Houston Rockets by a score of 134-129. Now, granted, it was Raptors' third stringers and maybe arguably fourth stringers that came in and won this game from the Rockets, who did lead for the majority of the game behind James Harden, who had, I would say, the easiest 34 points anyone's ever had, except I watched last season where James Harden was MVP caliber, definitely. And he was basically doing this on a nightly basis, but Harden was just absolutely amazing, unstoppable, and he kind of had the Rockets in the driver's seat for most of the game. But, you know, once the third quarter came around, the Raptors kind of figured out how to guard Harden, or at least Harden just didn't try to impose himself as much as he did in the first half. The Raptors were able to shore up their defense, and, you know, once the depth guys came in, the Raptors' depth guys just way better than the Rockets' depth guys. And so the Raptors won this game in the fourth quarter, but lots of positive takeaways from this game, starting with Pascal Siakam, who 24 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, a block in 27 minutes of play, got to the free throw line 8 times, was a perfect 8 of 8 from there. I mean, he looks good, man. He looks good. I know there's a lot of expectations for Pascal this year. It's not really quite fair to expect the most improved player of the year to take another similarly sized leap. And I don't think it's going to be to the same magnitude. Like Pascal, what, improved the scoring average by like 10 points a game last season, was averaging 20 points in the finals. Like, that's just already a very, very high standard to go from. You're not going to go from there to like 28 points per game unless you're like Giannis or something. But I don't know, man. Pascal might just be that good. I don't want to put that expectation on him so quickly, but he was amazing tonight. He was really, really, really sharp. And, you know, again, it's preseason. No one's taking that seriously. But he was getting guarded by PJ Tucker, who, you know, we know PJ. PJ is a really good defender. You know, a fan favorite here in Toronto for sure. And, man, Pascal just made PJ have a miserable night. PJ Tucker, 0 points. 5 fouls in 20 minutes. Pascal was doing some damage. to PJ, definitely putting him in foul trouble. That post up, the spin move, the drive towards the middle, all of it's there. That's something we know Pascal can already do. But the fact that he can extend his game with other things. So, first off, the main difference this year with Pascal, obviously, is that his role has changed. Right now, he's sort of bumped up a position, so he's basically the go-to guy. But he's not the typical go-to guy that you would expect someone like Harden or Westbrook to be, who the guys that have the ball in their hands all the time, running every single play, every possession goes through them. That's not the same role for Pascal. Pascal is a go-to guy within the context of a team that really shares the ball. The Raptors, at the core of it, are still a team that's going to move the ball, swing athletic, play hard on defense. It's not going to be oriented to Pascal in that same way. But Pascal is definitely the Raptors' most capable scorer. And I think this year, the big difference is that he's no longer going to be spending as much time on the baseline, which is where he was last season. Because either A, he was sort of spacing the floor for guys like Kawhi or even Kyle Lowry to sort of attack in the middle of the floor. Or honestly, he just wasn't, the first or second option sometimes. And so he would have to be the third option and sort of work that baseline like Ben Simmons in the playoffs. So, that was where Pascal spent a lot of his time last season. This year, it seems to be he's spending much more time up top and he's much more focused and involved in every possession. Now, granted, there was no Marc Gasol, no Kyle Lowry today, obviously. So Pascal had to take an even bigger role. But, he looks comfortable operating at the top of the floor. A couple of pick and rolls here and there. A couple nice dump-off passes to Serge Ibaka, who, he looks great for a 30-year-old. He hit two threes, one of which was like a 30-foot bomb to beat the shot clock, which it wasn't necessarily intended that way. I think Pat McCaw could do a better job of breaking down Ryan Anderson off the dribble for a point guard. But regardless, Pascal hit that shot. Really, really nice shot. But just overall, Pascal looked very confident, very capable. He looked like the second best player on the floor tonight next to Harden. And that's not easy. Like, there was a lot of good players in this game. Westbrook obviously being one of them. But, Pascal, he looked good, man. He looked good. His playmaking was solid early on. He had like three assists in the first 5 minutes. There was times where he was a little wild. He had five turnovers. A couple of those I would describe as erroneous charges. The referees in this game, it's preseason for everybody, so I get it. But, for the most part, Pascal was looking really, really sharp, obviously in great shape and great focus in terms of his mentality. And, he was good. He was really good. The only negative about Pascal really isn't even a negative. It's just that he was assigned to guard James Harden, and Harden just walked past him every time. Now, granted, I think this is a case where Siakam actually executed the defensive scheme very well, but it was just a case of the scheme maybe not being the right one for this approach with Harden, because obviously Harden is a very difficult, very, very, very difficult guard, for anybody. But, basically the assignment was for Pascal to sort of stand almost to the side of Harden to sort of take away his right hand, force him sort of moving towards more of his left. And I don't think Harden struggles with that. I think that's something that he saw a lot of last season, and Harden just got much, much better last year at the floater game. And so in this game, you saw that basically Harden had probably at least like six or seven of the same play where Pascal would take away his right hand, Harden would drive into the lane and then put up a little floater with his left and finish. And so, it was not annoying, but it was just funny to see that happen over and over and over again. It seems like a defensive adjustment was made at halftime. I can't really say what it was because Harden just wasn't as involved in the second half, but Harden was much more quiet in the second half. But Harden was burning Pascal a lot. But for the most part, Pascal looked really good, and as a lead man, I like him. I really like it. Everyone has high hopes for Pascal. Dangerously high hopes, I would say, but so far, he's living up to it, man. You can't argue with 24 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists in 27 minutes. Like, nothing there. Oh, the only thing other with Pascal is that he didn't really pull out the mid-range game, which I still think ultimately it's a case where he doesn't actually have the entire comfort and sense of when to go to that mid-range game throughout the course of a game. It's obviously something he worked very hard on in the offseason, and it's something that he's going to have to do, especially if he's matched up more against bigs. There wasn't as much switching from the Rockets today. And I don't think the Raptors made a point of attacking someone like Capella as compared to someone like Harden or Westbrook, for example, with Siakam on switches. But yeah, we just haven't seen that mid-range game yet. So, we'll look for it. I don't think there was a big need for it today, so we didn't see it. But hopefully we see it in future games because it looks really good in training and stuff. Fred VanVleet also looked really sharp. 16 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists in 28 minutes for Fred with 3 steals. And if we're going to be completely honest, man, he outplayed Russell Westbrook, who just, didn't look that great. If anything, actually, not to slander Westbrook at all, but it was actually kind of refreshing and a relief to see Westbrook take shots, because that meant Harden wasn't taking shots. And Westbrook, went his standard 1 of 6 from the 3-point line with a couple of turnovers. But Fred looked really sharp, looked really confident, man. I mean, it's funny when you look at his finishing stat line of 5 of 10 from the field, 2 of 6 from 3. It's not the most impressive stat line by any means, but at the same time, the way he plays, the confidence he plays with, you would never think he was doing that. You would think he was like 8 of 8 on every single shot that he took, because Fred is just, he's just really confident, Like, there's some players that win the championship and they just sort of get a permanent title boost from that. You've sort of seen it throughout the history of the NBA. And Fred, I mean, he was already very confident to begin with. So now he's just regularly taking 30-foot threes. And to be honest, I actually really support this decision because, A, he's a very good shooter. He's capable from shooting from there. So especially if he's open, he's going to make those shots. Like, it's not really a question of can he hit those shots. And for a guy who's, like, sub-6-foot, I'll be real. I've stood next to Fred. I'm definitely taller than Fred. Like, this man is what he shot from the field today, 5 of 10. If you're going to be small, like, you have to step out and create space somehow. And part of that somehow is coming out deeper in the 3-point line and shooting some deeper threes. And quite honestly, if he can do that, and if he can do that more often, if he can do that off the dribble a little bit, which we didn't really see much of today, a lot of it was, a lot of his threes were catch and shoot threes. If he can do more of that, then we're talking about a really, really good, like, starting caliber quality level player. Like, he's not going to be an all-star, but like, he looks pretty good out there, man. Looked really composed. I think Fred physically looks to be in a lot better shape. Last year, he was really banged up. He had, one injury after another, and, he had that hip pointer in the playoffs, which he finessed into a starting spot, essentially. Sorry, Danny Green. But, I don't know. Fred looks healthy. He looks quick. He looks... and actually, the best thing about Fred today was really he looked really decisive, which is the big issue with Fred last year. Like, I wrote a piece about, looking at Fred's case to start, and you can read about that. Scroll down my timeline or something. It's there. And one of the very jarring stats I sort of discovered in just looking back at Fred's season last year was 31% of Fred's shots came from with 7 seconds or left on the shot clock, which is an absurdly high number, right? Because even if you think about it, guys like Kawhi, guys like Kyle Lowry, guys like Pascal, they also have to create in the last 7 seconds, of course. Sometimes the offense breaks down and someone's just got to get a shot for you. But like, for those guys, it was like 16% of their possessions, 17%, 18% of the possessions. Like, it was, it was less than a fifth. For Fred, it was like a third. And I think that really goes to show sort of there needs to be an improvement in terms of his judgment, in terms of his decision-making. He needs to make quicker decisions because, one of the issues with Fred, he also led the team in terms of how many dribbles he had per touch. So every time he got the ball, he dribbled the ball more per touch than guys like even Kawhi and Kyle, which is just not acceptable, really. Like, as a point guard, you got to make quicker decisions. I thought today he made a lot quicker decisions. And honestly, I think that was one of the things holding Fred back. It's not like he can't do these things. It's just sometimes he runs a pick and roll, doesn't really work out, does not a really great passer, runs another pick and roll, doesn't really work out, and all of a sudden he's forcing a shot and he's missing, and it's a long rebound, defense goes the other way, it's scrambling the other way, and the other team gets a layup. Like, that's a lot of what happened with Fred last year, and when Fred was bad, that was a lot of the reason why it was bad. So I thought Fred showed a lot quicker in terms of his decision making, and it does seem to be that when he plays with a starting lineup, especially when he plays with more capable players, obviously, it seems to be his level is also raised. So I don't know, that might be a case in his favor for starting. And we know Fred obviously wants a starting spot, but Fred looked really good today. I was really impressed by Fred. Serge, very sharp, extremely sharp. You would never know that he just turned 30. Maybe all the age jokes about Serge were actually backwards, man. He looked younger than 30 today, for sure. 18 points in 22 minutes, 8 of 10 shooting from the field. Hit a 3 off a very nice drive by Pascal, and he kicked it out to Serge. Yeah, Serge was great. 18 points. Like, defensively, it was tough because, again, the James Harden pick and roll, which Clint Capella, which might be the most devastating pick and roll combination in the league right now. You know, maybe Steph and Draymond, but, like, Draymond doesn't have the finishing Capella does. Serge, like, he struggled defensively with that, but offensively, man, Serge, like, hit the first 5 shots of the game, was quick. I mean, he was spinning and dunking on people. Like, again, you would never know this man was 30. Like, he was playing like he's playing like it was 23 or something, man. Yeah, he looks really sharp. He looks physically, obviously, he always looks really chiseled and ready. But it's a very distant memory, that 2017 Serge Ibaka you saw, where, you know, he looked very slow and labored playing next to JV in the power forward lineup there. Like, he just, I don't know, that guy is just, I don't know, it's a distant memory, man, because Serge right now, it looks so sharp, and again, it's a testament to his professionalism, really, that a 30-year-old vet came into camp so ready to play, right? Nothing against Kyle, nothing against, you know, Mark, those guys can take their time. It's completely understandable for veterans to take their time. Guys like Westbrook, for example, this is his first preseason game, you know what I mean? Like, it's normal for guys of that much experience to sort of take it easy in training camp. It's probably a good idea too. But for Serge Ibaka to come in this ready and this sharp, it just speaks to how much commitment he has to the team and how much commitment he has to his career, man. He looks amazing. And, you know, I remember at training camp, someone asked him a question of, like, you know, with you winning the championship and then, you know, making a trip to Congo and helping Masai, obviously, with his Giants of Africa initiative and things like that, like, did you have enough time to sort of work on everything, because it was a short offseason? And Serge said, honestly, there's always time if you make time. And that's very true. That's very true. And it speaks to his mindset and the whole thing, man. He is really a good example for the guys on the team to follow, really. Because, I mean, again, a 30-year-old should not look this good this early in the season, and Serge looks amazing. Thought OG was good. Played a lot of 3 and D. You know, again, the stat line, not very impressive. 7 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, 21 minutes, 3 of 5 from the field. But honestly, man, that's what he did as a rookie that made everybody really love him. Like, that's what he did as a rookie. Now, obviously, in his third year, you want to see more improvements than what he did as a rookie. But at the same time, I think his role as a rookie, in terms of a 3 and D guy, that's what he should be striving for. And in terms of 3 and D, I thought he did that well today. Obviously, only hit 1 3. It was off a corner, off a little pin down. Kind of liked it, actually. Good action. He could have had other shots, but, you know, the distribution wasn't entirely there. And I think with a guy like Kyle Lowry, with a guy like Marc Gasol in the game, two of the Raptors' best passers, probably the Raptors' 2 best passers, actually, I think OG would have more opportunities there. But, you know, in terms of 3 and D, I thought OG was good. Like, he made good decisions on both ends of the floor. And that's something where last year, it felt like he was always trying to be someone he wasn't, in terms of they were trying to develop his scoring and, you know, creating off the dribble and maybe running a pick and roll. Like, none of that is really OG's game. Like, really, maybe down the line that's something they can do, but really, fundamentally, what makes him a very good and important and valuable player, especially as a young guy, is that he's makes good decisions, makes good reads, and he's a 3 and D guy. And if he's going to hold down a starting lineup spot, which I think he should hold down a starting lineup spot, because if you look at it, if the Raptors start small and they have, like, I don't know, Kyle and Fred in the backcourt, you need somebody bigger that's going to handle the bigger twos of the world and the bigger threes of the world. And, you know, especially if Pascal is going to do so much scoring, you don't want him to do that much defensively as well. So you kind of need a guy like OG to step in and take the toughest assignment. And OG today, he guarded Westbrook. Westbrook did not have a good game. 13 points, 4 of 10 shooting, 5 turnovers. You kind of need OG to be in there and just to sort of start and sort of balance out the lineup. And I liked what I saw today. Like, what OG did today is exactly what he needs to do to hold down a starting spot. And obviously, I want to see a little bit more in terms of maybe getting a little bit more involved. But OG, for the most part, was good. two dunks, a three. Like, that's what I want from OG. That's what I want from OG. In terms of the bench guys that impressed, I thought Rondae Hollis-Jefferson had one of the most active 13 minutes I've ever seen from anybody. I'm not saying he's like a wing version of Bismack Biyombo, but like he is just involved in everything. Like the amount of times he somehow got to the loose ball is very impressive. It's legitimately impressive. I mean, most of the times he's creating that loose ball himself by dribbling into traffic and then falling over and twisting and turning and, you know, collecting some offensive rebounds or whatever. But I don't know how he does it. It's not a pretty style of play by any means, but it's effective. Rondae had a very good 13 minutes today, and it's very similar to what we saw in the intra-squad scrimmage in Laval University, last week. Like, you know, Rondae is just, he gets involved, he does things. Like, he has very obvious flaws. Like, him shooting a basketball just doesn't look right at all. It looks physically painful, but he supplies energy, he supplies hustle, and in like 13 minutes off the bench, which is probably what he's going to play this season, is probably 13 minutes off the bench as like a backup four. It's not bad. Like, I'll take 7 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 2 of 4 from the field, 3 of 4 from the three-point or free throw line in 13 minutes. Like, that's a lot of production. That's a lot of energy in a short amount of time, and I like Rondae for that. I mean, he's not quite a discount Pascal Siakam because Pascal's touch from pretty much everywhere on the floor is like worlds better than Rondae, but Rondae at least replicates a lot of what Pascal does in terms of his role and the spaces that he's operating in. And so I don't know. I don't mind Rondae. If he does this all the time, if his activity is always this high, it's going to win you a lot of regular season games for sure. I thought Boucher was very impressive in his 18 minutes. He had 12 points of 4 or 5 shooting, 4 or 5 from the free throw line, got 7 rebounds, 2 assists, a block. You know, Chris, I'm not entirely sold on Boucher as an NBA player just because, like, he's so slim. Like, it's just hard to envision him doing things like boxing out and rebounding and getting a shot off. Like, he's going to be pushed around a lot. But at the same time, you know, if he can finish, if he can make up for it with his speed, with his athleticism, with his quickness, showing a little bit of an expanded handle right now, just like in summer league, he's carrying the ball up the floor and pushing the pace, which I like. If you're gonna get the rebound, you might as well try to push the pace, and he does an effective job of that. Yeah, I mean, you know, if he can do some of these things, and really, if he can finish reliably around the basket, which is something that last year he wasn't quite doing, but if he can finish reliably around the basket and maybe just make like one or two more passes. Like, I'm not asking for a lot, but I also don't want to see, like, Hassan Whiteside level, like, tunnel vision from Boucher. But, yeah, if he can finish reliably around the basket, that's something. And I think he might actually carve out, some backup center minutes. Like, obviously, Ibaka and Gasol are going to split most of the minutes at center. But it seems like they're going to play a little bit together. And if they play a little bit together, then all of a sudden there's a couple backup center minutes ready. And honestly, like, could Boucher contribute in the way that, like, Bebe contributed in previous years? Yeah, why not? Like 10 minutes, pure energy, you're either good and you're staying in, or you're bad and you're coming out real quick. Yeah, probably. And he does some things. He legitimately does some things. Like his defense, interior defense, obviously he provides a shot-blocking presence, even though he's a little jumpy and a little JaVale McGee-esque in terms of maybe not jumping at the right times and sort of selling out for the block. But also, like, his perimeter defense is pretty good. Like, for a guy who's a power forward, he moves really quickly, obviously covers lots of ground with his frame. And that's where his, you know, thin frame actually does help him, is his quickness. Like, his perimeter defense, a little Pascal-esque. And yeah, and if he can finish inside, like it's not a bad player. So I liked what I saw from Boucher. I liked what I saw from Matt Thomas. At least offensively, this man could definitely shoot. Defensively, he was getting blown by every single time. It was honestly a little embarrassing. His teammates, obviously having practiced with him, knew immediately that he needed help every single time down the floor, and so. It's good that his teammates already are trying to have his back, but of course you don't want a guy on the floor that always needs help on defense, because then you're just leaving guys open, and the Rockets definitely have 3-point shooters to sort of punish that sort of defensive strategy. But Yeah, so Matt Thomas definitely has to improve his defense to get more minutes. But, I mean, the man can shoot. The man can score. And, you know, that can't be questioned. Like, he came into the game immediately and hit a three. Like, I like that quality about a guy. Like, a lot of shooters kind of come off the bench. They might need one or two shots to sort of find the rhythm. Matt Thomas, man, he just comes off the bench like he was in the game already, and he just knocks down a three. He did the same thing in the intra-squad scrimmage as well. So, if for a bench guy, obviously you need that instant offense type of quality to him. And, you know, Thomas, I think he can definitely shoot in any sort of scenario. But, yeah, the defense has to improve. I like Brissett's energy, but aside from that, I don't know. He needs polish. He should go to the 905, and he probably will. And Terrence Davis, my guy Terrence Davis, who came on this podcast, or at least he did a sit-down with me in training camp. Man, Terrence Davis looked good. 8 points in 19 minutes, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals. Obviously, that's not like eye-popping numbers, but the fact that he got that involved, and the fact that the speed of the game didn't look to be above what Davis's level was, is very rare. Like, rookies come in and they are overwhelmed by the speed of the game, the physicality of the game. None of that really applies to Davis. Like, yeah, Davis had a couple of moments where he was raw, but, like, you know, it's nothing that, like, Norm wouldn't have done, for example, you know what I mean? So, or maybe that's a bad comparison, but still, it's not entirely out of character. It's not like he just wasn't able to get to his spots. No, Davis was able to get to his spots, and in another day, he would have been a little bit more efficient because he was over 5 from 3. And we kind of know he can shoot, man. I think he can shoot. Obviously, he needs to sort of, as any rookie does, he needs to come in and improve his game. But it's not a broken jump shot by any means. And it's a pretty reliable one. I should just, even just based on him watching him shoot around and stuff like that. But, man, Davis, yeah, he just finds ways to contribute. Like, it's the same thing in Summer League. Like, he's going to do a little bit of rebounding for you. He's going to do a little bit of playmaking. You know, he's new to the point guard role. He's never really just been a point guard. And the Raptors seem pretty intent on developing as a point guard, which is fine. He's a little combo guard-esque, but he could be more of a point guard. But, you know, his playmaking was good. Like, he came in, got a couple of assists right away, like 2 assists in his first minute. He's got great length and anticipation. So, you know, he got 3 steals today, including one where he just Westbrook tried to drive on him. Davis basically stepped in front, took the brunt of Westbrook's drive, which, again, like, I don't know, man. Like, 95% of NBA guards can't really do that without some help. And you know, it was a little Drew Holiday-esque in terms of how physical he is as a point guard and how big he is as a point guard. His frame is actually very similar to Drew. And I've seen other people make that comparison already. I'm not the first to do that, but, yeah, I mean, you know, he stepped in, he stripped Westbrook, you know, I think the ball went the other way and I think Boucher got 2 layups or 2 free throws or something like that, but yeah, Davis was good. And also, he had the play of the game by dunking on one of the Rockets' assorted bench guys. I'm sorry, I'm not sure who that was. The Rockets had a pretty deep bench. I could tell you it wasn't Austin Rivers, it wasn't Isaiah Hartenstein, and it wasn't like Tabo Sefolosha or Ryan Anderson, but probably, maybe like Gary Clark or this Clemens dude or someone named Pons. S. Pons. Who was S. Pons? All right, but regardless, yeah, Davis, he caught a body. You can look for that highlight. Pretty much everywhere, but it's on my Twitter account. It's on the Raptors Twitter account, wherever you want to find it. But it's worth seeing. Terrence Davis caught a body. And then, yeah, and in terms of who didn't really, you know, impress, I don't, like, Stanley played theoretically. I don't know. I mean, like, he didn't feature at all in the first half. He came in 4 minutes left in the third quarter, played 7 minutes, didn't really do much with the ball. Like, he had a couple opportunities to maybe step into a three. He mostly decided to dribble past and try to make a play, but the play didn't really happen. I don't know. It's a very throwaway 7 minutes for Stanley. Pat McCaw got 22 minutes, didn't take a single shot. Like, I get that he's a point guard, but I feel like he's a point guard only in the sense that he never wants to shoot, so he's always passing. Because, like, as a point guard, how are you going to play 21 minutes, go 0-for-0 from the field, not shoot a single three, and not shoot a single free throw? Like, really? Really? Like, yeah, okay, he had 4 assists against one turnover. That's good. That's good decision-making. But also, like, yo, in the modern NBA, you can't be a point guard like this, man. You can't. You have to shoot at some point. Like, a couple times he had Ryan Anderson switch, and Ryan Anderson on a switch. And we're talking about Ryan Anderson. He's, like, 30 now. He's always been, you know, Matt Thomas-esque in terms of people picking on him and driving on him. He's a defensive liability, let's be real. And if you're a point guard and you have Ryan Anderson on the switch, I need to see you do something with that. You're either definitely blowing past him and drawing help and dumping it off, or you're shooting it. And McCaw just didn't even do that. So, like, I don't understand this whole thing with McCaw. Like, I see that he provides energy. I see that he does some things well. He makes right reads, things like that. I get it. But also, like, yo, how could you be a point guard and not take a single shot in 21 minutes? I don't get that. So, that's a little strange. Norm. Yeah, Norm. I mean, I guess it was okay because he had 14 points in 18 minutes. That's not bad at all. Like, he shot 5 of 9 from the field, 2 of 3 from 3. Hit both free throws. There's nothing to complain about there. But just watching it, like, he made a lot of bad defensive decisions in terms of just leaving shooters wide open. He wasn't creating anything for teammates. And honestly, like, I'm not really sure there with Powell. You know what I mean? Like, yes, 14 points is nice. I think he'll, the scoring is definitely useful on a team that doesn't have that many, like, pure scores. And Norm, at least in some sense, is a pure scorer because he can get a shot. But you got to do a couple other things on the floor is all I'm saying. Even though you have 14 points, I wouldn't really say this is a good performance by Norm. But overall, an encouraging start for the Raptors. Obviously, no Kyle Lowry, no Marc Gasol. We need to see them integrated back in the team. I think it'll be pretty seamless because they're both such high IQ players. But we do need to see what physical state they're in. But for the most part, encouraging start. The Raptors play again another preseason game in Tokyo on Thursday, also at 6 a.m. So my sleep schedule is just going to be completely messed up for the week. But, there'll be another podcast for that. In terms of this one, the three stars tonight, obviously number one, Pascal Siakam, 24 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists. Second star, I'm giving that to probably Fred, 16 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals in 28 minutes. Pretty good. And third star, Serge Ibaka, 18 points, 5 rebounds, and assists, 8 of 10 shooting from the field in 22 minutes. In terms of the Gerald Henderson Award, I got to get that to PJ, man. I'm sorry. That's the Patrick Patterson Award. My bad. Patrick Patterson Award, 0 points. Actually, very fitting, actually. For PJ. Sorry, buddy. But this was a playoff Pat-like performance from you today. And yeah, in terms of the Gerald Henderson Award, I'm not really sure where to go with this one, I guess. Like, Tabo Cephalosha came off the bench and had 10 points in 15 minutes, didn't miss a single shot. So I guess I'll go there. He's a plus 11, 15 minutes. Okay, that's pretty good. I kind of forgot about Tabo Cephalosha, I'm not going to lie. It is really, really messed up what the NYPD did to him. That's one of the most messed up stories around the NBA in the last 5 years. I'm happy to see he's back on the floor. I'm happy to see he's healthy. And he had a good game. So shout out Tabo Cephalosha. He could even play for the Rockets, It makes sense. They already got Harden, they already got Westbrook. You might as well get Tabo as well. You just complete the backcourt from the OKC the Thunder teams. That does it for the podcast. Thanks to everyone for listening. Again, this is very exciting to have Raptors basketball back. I didn't think I would go 32 minutes on a preseason podcast, but I'm just excited, man. I'm excited to get another season going. Look, I know it's not a championship season coming. I'm just going to be completely realistic about that. But, like, yo, there's a lot to watch for. This is a very exciting team. This is a very good team. I think the core identity of the Raptors has not changed. All right? They are still a very long, very athletic, young team that shares the ball and plays unselfishly. And I love watching basketball like that. Like, they play a very good style of basketball. A lot of guys young guys to be excited about. Obviously, slightly older guys that might take a leap. And even the veterans, I'm excited in the sense that I know what they can do, and I'm happy that they're on the Raptors. So it's a good team, man. It's a good team. I don't need to convince anybody that, to watch the Raptors. But, I mean, with all the – I think the bandwagon fans that might have latched on during the playoffs and stuff like that, and you may look at it like, okay, they're not going to win a championship, so maybe I should tune out. I don't know, man. You're missing out. You don't want to tune on this team. This team is good. This team is still very good, and they're going to do some things. And there's a lot to watch for. So I'll be back on Thursday after the next preseason game to deliver another recap. But in the meantime, thanks everyone for listening. And of course, if you haven't already, watch Run It Back with me and Alex, Alex Wong, Stephen LeBron on Instagram and Twitter. It's a great show. It's a show for Raptors fans. By Raptors fans. It's very authentic. We're going to be in very, honestly, good-looking restaurants and bubble tea spots and things like this. It's very well produced. Like, it looks really good. And yeah, we're going to have conversations that you and your fellow Raptors fans would have. It's going to be genuine. It's going to be authentic. Hopefully it's funny. Hopefully it's insightful. If it's not funny, blame Alex. If it's not insightful, blame me, I guess, or Alex. But yeah, it's definitely worth your time. And you know, the first episode we shot in Quebec City at a very nice Asian themed bar. And you know, if you're in Quebec City, check out Chez Tao for sure. But yeah, watch that on YouTube. And you know, in terms of for everybody at Yahoo Sports Canada, it's going to be a big year for us. We got a lot of things coming out for you. There's even going to be a new show in terms of on this podcast network on Raptors Over Everything. So look out for that. I'm not quite ready to make the official announcement, but it's going to be something I think really does engage Raptors fans in a way that it's not a new idea, but definitely it's an underserved idea. So look out for that. I'll make an announcement on that shortly. But there's lots to come from the team. So yeah, it's going to be another great season. Thanks for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.